Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, guys. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download the title free and start listening. Tis that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. And oh my god, you guys, our Patreon is so, so good right now. A ton of people just hopped on and joined us. Like, it really means a lot that you guys have supported us in this way. We love you all so much, and we're going to do everything within our power to make sure that your time there is worth the money you're donating.
You know who we love especially, though? We love Stephanie L.
Terry Needleman.
Max Lunig.
Benjamin Lehrer.
Chris O'Kelly.
Lily Ackles.
Danielle Renix.
Mackenzie Horner.
Taryn the Duck. I think I'm getting that right.
Today, Junior.
Come on.
Melissa Goldman.
Jess Lightning, which better Jess than you, I assume.
100% a better Jess than me. Ewan Cassidy.
Haley McDonald.
And they are all incredible people that are helping us and getting a lot of perks. In fact, by the time you hear this, I believe there should be a Patreon commentary for Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Which I am super excited for. We have not done it yet, so I haven't seen it yet. But I've hear it is the cheesiest musical in existence, is what
voted on by the Patreon. So if voted you want to vote... If you want to vote on future commentaries and be involved in us, they're getting a lot of cool things that you normies aren't. So come on, join them.
There's also some other good commentaries, too. I think the Music Man one came out really good.
Yeah, so did the Cats one. they give us a little financial support that helps us keep the lights on here at Musicals with Cheese. So just go to the Musicals with Cheese Patreon and help us out. Andrew, do you want to talk about our affiliate link?
I will talk about our affiliate link. I seem to do that every time. But I like it. So in the description of every episode, you should find a little link to Amazon. And if you click that link and then buy anything on Amazon, we will get a portion of whatever you spend there. It costs nothing extra for you. It's just an easy way to support us if you're going to buy something anyways. So go ahead and use that as well.
Because we're broke. And also, I know for a fact you're listening to this on iTunes. So why don't you go and, with this phone in your hand, go and tell a friend that they should listen to us. Tell them what you like about the show. And then go onto iTunes or the podcast app or whatever they want to call it now. And just leave a 5-sentence or 5-word review about what you like about our show. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be drawn out. Just tell the world what you like about us and why you listen every week.
All right, we appreciate you, and let's get to the real show, I think.
Let's go to the real show. Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, the podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater. How are you today, Andrew?
I'm doing all right. I mean, I just rented this place. It's a new, my mics might sound a little different. I just rented a place in the woods. And then Jess just randomly calls me and we start recording the podcast and I'm a little bit upset he didn't call ahead.
In case you didn't know that setup, today we are doing Paul Gordon's brand new musical, No One Called Ahead.
I'm no one special, just a follower who's following trends. I'm no one special, just an ordinary guy with few friends. In a light cashmere coat that I got at half price, 'cause the sales girl was nice.
No One Called Ahead follows Ben as he seeks a weekend getaway, but gets more than he bargained for when he receives a series of visits from several astonishing women from the great beyond. This darkly comic romance with a contemporary pop rock score explores how life can change in an instant. For this artist, alone in the woods, with his entire life on the line and his potential still undiscovered, the answer proves not to be what he expected. It was written by Paul Gordon, who is one of my favorite and underrated musical theater composers. He's done musicals I love, like Jane Eyre. I did a video review of that many years ago. I love that musical. And Daddy Long Legs, which is my ice cream musical. That is just a feel good, like I turn that on when I'm feeling sad musical. And
Daddy Long Legs are scary though. Like, you got the big.
Well, the thing is, she just sees a guy and she thinks he looks like a Daddy Long Legs, so she calls him Daddy Long Legs.
Are you sure she's not calling him Daddy and he has long legs?
That is not incorrect. But this specific production was filmed and produced by
Apples and Oranges Studios.
Apple and Oranges Studios in collaboration with Streaming Musicals. Honestly, they're starting up this brand new Broadway HD type program where they film and produce and release film stage musicals. And they ensure that everyone gets paid. So unlike the subscription service side of Broadway HD, where it's really hard to figure out who gets paid, since you're buying it the specific musical, royalties can be divvied out properly. So that's great. I think that's fantastic. And you can learn more about that in the interview.
It's also neat to find interesting musicals like this one that are not so well known. I'm assuming this has probably never been anywhere near Broadway, so
nope. And this isn't the first one they've done. The first one Streaming Musicals and Apple and Oranges did was Paul Gordon's Emma, which also was well received. But Paul Gordon is also notable for having the first live musical ever streamed to a theater. So that was Daddy Longlegs. So I imagine he probably saw how well that worked out and thought, I could do this. Like, this is the way to see musicals. And that's awesome. That really is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to find live showings of musicals. I mean, let's just be honest here. Some of us live, you know, like in the deep woods of upstate New York. And, you know, you can't really go out and see a musical every week. So if you're trying to watch them, you kind of need a different way to do so. And streaming is definitely nice. Although I will say the one thing is that they shot it like a film, which is a little.
Yes. And I think that's one of the growing pains of this new developing medium. But we'll get into that later. Andrew, tell us the general plot of No One Called Ahead and what you thought of it.
I feel like I already did that at the beginning, but basically, the main character, who is an artist that has never shown his art to anyone, as we discover, goes into the woods or something like that. He's in the middle of nowhere. He rented a place on Craigslist and he gets visited by a bunch of ghosts because he's going to die. Because, and as we find out later, his girlfriend is poisoning his drinks, his protein shakes. And that's the basic plot, I feel like, unless we want, like, a full description.
As you said before, it's very Christmas Carol, Ghost of Christmas Past type.
Yeah, I think I said that the first time we recorded this.
And it is very effective in doing this, although I'm not quite sure the message came about. One of the issues I think I found with this idea of going right to streaming musicals, like, from, like, instead of going through the previews process and all that, is you have a lot less people viewing it and critiquing it before you get there, so you can much more easily have a finished product that might not have been as finished or polished as it would have been if it had attempted for Broadway. But as we now know, that not all musicals are destined for Broadway, nor should they be.
This is almost, it's almost like a demo version, you know, like it feels like, as you said, exactly, there just wasn't enough critique to remove some elements that aren't as strong as others, or to strengthen elements that, you know, would really be the foundation of the whole show. So you kind of get a bit of a muddled message where it's obviously, well, not obviously, actually, that's kind of the problem. It's supposed to be a dark comedy, but you don't really get that until near the end. And I assume on second or third viewing, you might have a better appreciation of some of the jokes, but at the first time watching, they sometimes fall flat.
And I'm not sure it's falling flat because the jokes are bad, but more because it is a performative, like, on a stage, like, they're on a stage performing, and there is no audience interaction. There is no applause at the end of a song, and there is no laughter at a joke, despite there being a pause for laughter. It's a lot. I had moments where I was flashing back to, say, those edits of, like, yeah, Friends with a laugh track removed, and how,
or Big Bang Theory, no, with no laugh track.
Yeah, like, those jokes probably would have really landed for me personally a lot more if I had had the audience, like, guiding me, as opposed to just a pause for a laughter that never comes.
Maybe this is an argument for canned laughter in this case.
I don't think canned laughter is a bad thing. I never have, though.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's in how it's used. You know, if it's used as, like, here's a bad joke, but we put canned laughter so it's funny, then yeah, that's not good. But if you have an actually good joke, but it has to have that laugh afterwards, it's in the way the joke is told.
Mm-hmm. And I think everyone in here, like, you got Anne Harada, who is known for Avenue Q and is very good, but the jokes don't land because you don't have that theatrical reaction. Because, yeah, this is a film, but they're still performing theatrically. They're performing to the back of the house.
Well, they're performing to the camera directly.
Yes.
And as I said in Fiddler on the Roof, I like it when they talk to the camera, and that's fun. But when you're performing to the camera, it's a little bit different.
But these are, I feel like, are growing pains of a new developing medium of filming musicals. Like,
yeah, these are not necessarily problems with the show. It's problems with the medium that the show is being told in.
Yeah, and it's fun kind of to pick apart those and it is. I know it sounds like we're just tearing it apart, but it is fun to pick apart those. The content of the musical, I think the songs are all stellar. Like, they're all really good. I don't think I remember one being, like, really bad or anything like that. Paul Gordon's got a good track record with that. This is the first solely original book Paul Gordon has ever written, though, if I remember correctly. Everything else he's worked on, he's worked with John Carrad on Jane Eyre and a bunch of other things, Daddy Long Legs. And this time it's kind of him on his own, and usually he's based on, like, a book, like Jane Eyre, Emma, or Daddy Long Legs. And this one, he's kind of coming up with original content. And I'm starting to think that he does a good job, and it's really admirable, but I still think he might have needed another voice in there to, like, differentiate between the songs and the lyrics to more define those characters. Because you do have very specific characters, like Ruth is a very specific character, but a lot of them tend to sound a bit the same, like Jane and especially the females. Like, the actors bring a lot
Jane,
to it.
Jane of Arc and Penny Lane have similar character themes a lot of times.
It reminds me a lot of the Marvel movies, how they're all a little too quippy, that they kind of sound the same.
Yeah.
Especially in, like, the Joss Whedon films.
Yeah. And yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I think you're right about that. Absolutely. And I also feel as though some of the characters don't get enough time. Mm-hmm. Jane of Arc. I guess we have to kind of get into the characters a little bit.
All right,
Jane of Arc is Jane of Arc is one of the main characters after Ben. I guess we'll talk about Ben first. How about you go ahead?
Okay. So the show opens with Ben. He comes in. He has a conversation with a poster of John Lennon. And then he gets a call from Jane of Arc. And the premise is that all these women who come and see him are undiscovered artists or individuals much like himself. And Jane of Arc is Joan of Arc's undiscovered, unappreciated sister.
Yeah, which is a bit of an odd choice, considering Joan of Arc is not an artist. Joan of Arc is a very famous, likely schizophrenic teenager.
Who got burned alive.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call her an artist. But Jane of Arc...
I don't see how a sibling would see them as being overshadowed by her.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she is more famous, but do you really... Would you want to be famous for that?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't. And the actress performing Jane is so good, and she's very well performing. But the thing is, she's not on stage enough where you feel like she has a presence where you understand why Ben would have such this fixation on her.
Yeah, Ben gets like infatuated with her. As like a love interest, and it's weird because she only shows up about two times, and then
she's the third time
where she's someone else, right?
Yeah. Jane shows up twice, and then she comes back as someone else, you know, like, wait, are you Jane? Are you someone new?
Which, if someone said that to you, you would have to look at them and maybe leave.
I have a bit of an issue with that trope to begin with. The, like, Wizard of Oz, like, you were in my dream type thing.
It's you
like,
were there, and you were there.
Especially if it's the love interest. Like, if you wake up and the love interest from, like, the 1800s that you dreamt about is suddenly there in 2019, like, oh, is that just your reward? You get someone that looks identical but has none of the same experiences as this person you thought you were into?
You know, I think Endgame handles this the best, where new Gamora is not the same as old Gamora, okay?
spoilers,
heavy spoilers. Actually, Bill and Ted handles it the best, where they go back in time and get the people, get the princesses and bring them to the future.
I think Ellie Kemper is playing one of the princesses in Bill and Ted 3. Fun fact.
Really? Oh, they're actually bringing the princesses back? I'm happy
yeah.
about that.
They've changed actors in every film.
Yes.
George Carlin can come back, though. Unless they Peter Cushing him.
Which they should not. They should not do.
And then after Jane disappears...
Penny Lane.
Penny Lane comes in.
Named. So, we didn't really talk about this. John Lennon, big theme in this. The opening number, and it comes back a lot, is Dear John. And there is an actual painting of John Lennon that Ben is talking to for the entire show. And John Lennon's almost the audience because the camera sees things from his point of view a lot. So Penny Lane being named after the Beatles, Penny Lane, which I don't know too much about the Beatles. That is a Beatles song, right?
Yes, that is a Beatles
song. Yeah.
You hate the Beatles. Can we have that on the record that Andrew hates the Beatles?
I don't hate the Beatles. I think they are... Their influence on music is heavily overplayed because honestly, I don't think they're really that influential because they didn't actually bring that much to the table.
The Monkees brought more to the table.
I mean, I do like some of the Monkees songs better than the Beatles, but that's another. I would say a lot of the bands that came after the Beatles that were inspired by the Beatles brought more to the table.
I didn't mind the John thing, and I didn't mind like the casual reference to Penny Lane. I don't like
that. No,
I don't like when the dialogue mentions like at one point he's like, "Nothing's gonna change my world," and like things like that.
Penny Lane is my favorite character.
I love her too. She has the best song, at least. She has basically sets up the theme that they're all undiscovered artists, and Penny Lane is also the junkie girl that beat Bobby Fischer at chess. And then died promptly afterwards.
Is that a real story?
I'm sorry, I didn't look it up. I'm a bad person. It doesn't sound real.
It does not sound real.
I don't think Joan of Arc had a sister named Jane.
I know that one's not real.
Penny comes in and says, hey, we're all undiscovered, but you're gonna die.
So the first couple songs are not very helpful for Ben, the main character.
No, he just... I feel... He is kind of an audience surrogate, and he gets frustrated, but... I feel like he gets a little too frustrated and a little too snippy. Like, if he had been a little bit more polite to these folks, it would have I feel like he's a little too abrasive.
No, I'm with him, though. They broke into his house. He doesn't know that they're ghosts. Well, I mean, legitimately, he doesn't know they're ghosts at this point. He thinks that they broke into his house.
Yeah, fair.
in all honesty, I think he's a little too lenient on them.
Get out of my house!
Yeah, for real, like, I'd be frightened. This is a place I rented on Craigslist and there's people in it.
Maybe. But then after Penny leaves saying, like, oh, you got a lot of folks coming, you're not getting much sleep, then comes Bernice, who is a lawyer, and makes him sign some paperwork about being dead, because being dead is bureaucracy.
Yes. And this has a bit of a, I don't know, it reminded me of Beetlejuice, where all the lawyers... When you know when in the Beetlejuice when you die you have to go talk to all the lawyers
and you gotta sign these paperworks.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there was something else that it reminded you of. I can't remember, but that's what it reminds me of.
Reminds me a little bit of Dead Like Me.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, that's a good show. Highly recommended. But yeah, it reminds me of Dead Like Me. I think that her character is a Brooklyn stereotype. Like, you gotta sign the papers. You're being poisoned by your girlfriend.
Yeah, I like her.
I like her too, but she also has one of the most baffling lines in the show that makes me like, all right, what side is this show on? Where she's like, you know, just Ruth might be poisoning you, but she's a good person.
Yeah, and they never even come back to that, really. It's like that line exists, and then... And then when Ruth does show up, she just sings a bunch of villain songs.
Like she is like a Disney villain.
Yeah, it's like,
and
wait.
It's great, but I'm like, wait, Bernice says she's a good person.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be like, oh, I had a good reason and I'm misguided. But like, no, it's just like, oh, no, I wanted to kill you because I wanted to steal your art.
You see, I didn't understand the tone. I did not understand the tone of this musical until Ruth came on. I'm like, ah, I got it.
I get it. Everything sucks. And it's funny.
And that's great. I love like nihilistic, like dark humor. I just didn't get it until then.
I think the problem is it's too hopeful at the beginning.
At the beginning, you think this could be Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah, no, you need to like, I think there needs to be something that crushes him just immediately. I think.
We need something dark to happen.
Yeah. Maybe John Lennon should have shown up and been like, your art sucks, kid.
Or maybe like a scene with a ghost at the very beginning, like where they're all chatting about the job to do and then he comes in.
Ah, that
like something
work.
Like that could set up like the fantasy world we're in.
Or maybe give Ruth an earlier song.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Or make her more than just, like, the answering machines. Like, I know we hate Rent so much, but we could do an answering machine where she has, like, what are you doing, babe? Like, drink your protein shake. Like, something like that. Something.
Oh, Jess is coming up with a song right now. What are you doing, babe? Drink your protein shake.
Drink your protein shake. But he signs the contract, and then Bernice is off, and she's replaced by an angel.
This is my least favorite character.
You don't like the angel?
Not at all. I think the angel's kind of boyfriend song is dumb.
Why?
And the payoff for it is even dumber. Sorry.
I don't like her angels can have boyfriend songs. No, I don't think the joke lands at the end either, but I like her and her performance and like the little scavenger hunt they go on.
I suppose. But this is where you find out the actual plot.
Yes. Explain, Andrew.
Okay, so the place he rented on Craigslist has artwork that is from a different undiscovered artist that it was hidden there, and then when he dies, that artwork will get discovered by someone who will then get hit by a car, and then the person that gets hit will sell it for money, and then they'll use the money to pay for med school, and then...
No, she got insurance.
She gets insurance. The insurance gives her money. The artwork is destroyed. Yeah, so the artwork's destroyed in the car accident, but she gets insurance money that she uses to go to med school, and then she creates something that will save a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. It's very convoluted.
Then there's a really callous joke where he's like, well, that's great for the cancer girl. Which what is about that, my art?
I think that's actually my favorite line in the whole thing.
At the first watch, I didn't know it was a joke, but every other, like, on every subsequent watch, I'm like, oh, okay, that's the nihilism humor we got here.
It's like, oh, okay. He doesn't give a shit about anything because he's an artist.
I love how this kind of hates artists, despite the fact that it kind of is paying lip service to artists.
It, like... secretly loves artists, I think, but at the same time, it recognizes that artists are all egotistical.
I think it loves art, but it hates artists.
Fair enough.
I think that's the
end
statement.
I don't think I mentioned that the art that is discovered at the place he rented on Craigslist is art from him in a past life.
Yeah, it's kooky.
So,
like, he has a lot to stomach in this one meeting, and one of them is the fact that past lives exist.
What doesn't make that much sense to me, though, is why does he have to sign all this paperwork to die, though? Is he not going to get reborn again? Do you only get a certain number of past lives?
Or are you giving up a body or something? Like, yeah, you got to sign away this body and get a new one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure.
Okay, but then Ruth shows up inevitably, and she is batshit evil, and it's kind of great. It's really great.
Yeah, what is her song? Love is Death?
Yeah. Where she's like, if you love me, you'll die for me.
Yeah, and it's like, you crazy.
It's like the perfect you crazy. Like, she comes in and she's like the straight-laced, cute-looking girl. I think he describes her at one point as she looks like the girl next door. I never understood what that means, but maybe you do. But
it means that there's a girl that lives next door to you, so she's your childhood friend.
She looks like his childhood friend then.
Yep.
And...
maybe. I don't know what that means.
Flipping insane is like, you're going to die for me and I love you because that's love. And I love that scene. I'm not going to lie. I think the girl that plays Ruth is really chewing the scenery in the best way.
Oh, and she looks at the camera a lot, which is really like uncomfortable.
In a good way, though.
In a good way, yes.
It's unlike the first Dear John scene where I feel like I'm being talked like I'm John. What?
I don't want to be John Lennon. I've never beaten my wife.
Yeah, exactly. But then Ruth,
do you think John Lennon hits the angel?
Oh.
It's like being hit as an angel.
Call back to our carousel episode, folks.
Oh yeah, and then Ruth becomes even more evil and decides that she is going to also steal the artwork that his past life made.
And that changes everything. Now Ruth's going to die horribly.
Her undoing.
I guess, she got greedy.
So then she dies instead, and everything still happens the same way, but Ben lives, and Ben then still gives credit to Ruth for some reason.
Oh, yeah, he gives credit, all the credit to Ruth, because it doesn't matter about the art. The art is the only thing that matters, not the person that made it.
Yeah, and I guess he thinks that he'll make more money if she did it, but I'm not really sure how he's going to make much money off it since it's her art, so wouldn't it go to her as, like, family? I don't know. Maybe he is her family.
She married her brother. Great.
Excellent. And then Jane of Arc shows up again as the person who is looking at the art, and they fall in love pretty quickly.
Wait, now I got a question. Is that a reincarnation? Because we did set up that past lives exist.
I assumed it was. Yeah, the story is kind of the weak point.
But I think the songs tie it together pretty well. I almost kind of would have preferred this if this was sung through.
Oh, without dialogue?
Yeah, without dialogue. All sung.
A lot of the dialogue scenes are kind of the worst aspects of the show.
And they feel like they're meant to be sung. Like, they feel heightened enough where they could have been sung scenes.
Or cut entirely. Like, pointless enough where they didn't need to exist.
Like, especially the scavenger hunt scene. I can see that being a really cool setup for a song. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. Tis that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese to get started today. This week, I am suggesting Angels in America, because they can have boyfriends. It is by Tony Kushner, and narrated by Andrew Garfield, Nathan Lane, Susan Brown, Denise Goh, Beth Malone, James McArdle, Lee Pace, Nathan Stewart Jarrett, Bobby Cannavale, and Edie Falco. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. So, Andrew, do you think that they have their phone in their hands right now? Because if they do, they have the ability to text their friends one thing, and that would be that our show is awesome, and to send them a link.
I know a lot of people say they listen to our show while on their morning commute, so I bet you their phone is right nearby.
Don't text and drive, guys. Have a friend send this message.
Do it when you're done driving.
Or speech to text. That works. Tell Siri, hey.
You don't have to do that, though. Speech to text can be still dangerous, Jess.
All right. Let's get back to the show, guys.
Dear John, is there something I'm missing, dear John? I just can't make sense of it, John. What more could befall us? You are the Eggman, but I'm not the walrus, dear John.
Dear John.
Dear John. Probably the most recognizable song in the whole show because they sing it a lot.
Yeah, it is reprised quite a bit. This is a song to John Lennon from Ben asking basically, like, what's it like to be an artist? Well, I wish I could be you. That kind
of. As someone who's not a huge fan of John Lennon, I'm not sure how I feel about a worship piece on him. Ben literally has a shrine set up to him, and that's what he's singing at. So it's a little awkward. But as far as, like, if it works for the character, the song is nice. And, I mean, the melody is obviously catchy enough. We've sung it how many times this half hour?
It is stuck in my head for, like, weeks and weeks. Because Paul Gordon is really good at that songwriting thing. Feels a lot like a Dear Evan Hansen Be More Chill type song, which is unlike the rest of his work, which is very much in the past, which is interesting to hear.
It does also set up the main character very well right away.
Artist that wants to be discovered, like John Lennon.
He wants to change the world like John Lennon did.
Man.
Where's my weed?
It did kind of do all the Andrew triggers right at once. Like, he's a stoner that can't find his weed and he worships the Beatles.
Yeah, and he wants to change the world with music. Or, art.
It is weird that a painter is worshiping John Lennon, I will say.
But I mean, painters don't have many people to worship. I mean, who are you going to look up to? That guy that cut his ear off? I mean,
George Seurat, I hear he lived a pretty fine life and didn't like abuse any wives.
Is that the guy that splatter paints?
No, he's blue, 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 blue.
Oh, right. I don't think he existed. No, I'm just kidding. That was the second George that didn't exist.
My name is Jane. I have a story, a sad, sad story. My name is Jane. And no, my life is not well known, not like my bitchy sister Joan. Let me explain. My name is Jane. Of Arc, Joan's unrecognized saintlier little sister.
Let's talk about My Name is Jane.
I mean, song-wise, it's fine. I can remember the main line of it, like the My Name is Jane or whatever the heck, and then he sings it again.
Mm-hmm. I don't like his reprise. I know we're supposed
to... Well, his reprise is a bit weird, just because he doesn't know her very well, so it's like, why are you singing about her?
We know that her name is Jane, like, and her song elaborates more on what she's been through in her story, and the fact that she has a story that no one cares about. Like, I like that. That was a really good setup of a theme.
Yes. What do you think of the song itself? I'm curious.
I think it's really relaxing to listen to. It's really mellow, especially coming from Dear John, which is a little bit more of a, I wouldn't call it heavy rock, but a little bit more of an intense, less mellow rock. Whereas yeah. This is a very mellow, calming, and I think the actress really performs it well.
The undiscovered, so many of them, the undiscovered, what a waste. Discarded and misplaced.
Let's talk about The Undiscovered, because I like this song.
I love this song.
This one's a bit more of like a smooth type of, I don't want to say jazzy, because it's not really... jazzy.
It's like a staccatoed like beat, like bum bum bum.
Yeah,
like, it's an upbeat song that isn't like alternative rock.
The vocals feel a little jazzy,
just because she has kind of like that smoky rock voice.
Yeah, I like it. This is probably, I want to say this is my favorite song in it. I think
I'm gonna agree with you. It's the only one that feels like it's made for that character. Whereas
yeah.
The Angels Can Have Boyfriend and every other song feels like it could have been interchangeable between the rest of them. This one feels like, all right, this belongs to Penny Lane, it belongs to the time period she was in, and it belongs to the character type of like this junkie from the 60s.
Exactly. Yeah, because this one has an actual feel that is really specific to the type of character that is singing it, which is really good to have in a musical.
Yeah, you should. Well, the songs can't be interchangeable. You can't just give Valjean a song and then throw it to Marius and make it the same song. Andrew Lloyd Webber. Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Oh, shit. He's getting called out right now.
Yeah, meet me outside the school. I'll fight you like Joe Biden fought Donald Trump.
Dude, he will kick your ass.
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stick his cats on me.
Dude, no, he would kick your ass. I'm looking at you right now. Yeah, you're drinking your bottle of piss. I'm looking at you. He would kick your ass.
I'm wearing
Jess
a Hawaiian,
wearing a Hawaiian shirt right now.
They're all gonna think you're joking, but he's not. I'm wearing fucking a Hawaiian with stripes, which is like the worst.
Yeah. No, like you're not beating up Andrew Lepper. It's not happening.
I'm no one special. Just a follower who's following trends. I'm no one special. Just an ordinary guy with few friends. In a light cashmere coat that I got at half price. Cause the sales girl was nice.
No One Special is something we didn't actually mention when we were talking about the story, which I think lyrically this song is... probably one of the better ones.
Yeah, lyric-wise,
or at least it could have. It really could have been. I think it still is. I mean, I think it could have been played better, but it still works very well.
Andrew and I thought up a pitch of how we would have done it if we were given like this set of songs in the story. And
yeah,
we would have put this as his "I Want" song very early in the show, but where he's saying "I'm no one special," but. He obviously thinks he's someone that's fucking great, but he's just kind of like self-deprecating. And then by the end, when he says it, he has that discovery. So we have like a much more clear arc. Where in the end we hear the Angels Can Have Boyfriends song, like he's singing that again at Ruth, and that's supposed to be her, like, oh, the triumphant arc moment.
The triumphant arc moment in that is just he went from asking for John's approval to having received John's approval.
Yeah.
That's the
basically.
Arc. But I think that a better arc would have been him going from this, like, secretly egotistical person who self-deprecates to someone who actually believes that he's not really that special.
And I think it's a bit more of a catchy song than Dear John. As much as I like Dear John, I feel like it's setting up a joke more than it's, like, setting up a character, if that makes sense.
It almost is a gag, because they don't reveal that he's singing about John Lennon until near the end of the song.
So I think, like, he's like, I'm no one special, I just make paintings that no one else can do.
Like, yeah,
something like that, where, like, I'm better than everyone, but I'm not special because, you know.
Yeah.
And then by the end, when he calls up Ruth and we finally realize he actually understands, I'm no one special, sure, I can do this, but it doesn't matter that I can do this, the art is really all that matters, which would have cemented his arc a little bit more.
Song wise what do you think? Like,
I like
music.
The song. I like this one. I hum it a lot. And I know I shouldn't be judging by hummable melodies because Sondheim will crucify me. But I do like the song. It is really effective. And I just think it could have been more effective as an I want song and then a payoff I want song.
I would say if a song is catchy, there is some value to it.
All right.
Love is death. Now love is death. And yet still you could forgive me if I just kiss you one more time. And though it's clear you will not with me, I hope that you'll forgive my crime.
Do you want to talk about Love is Death?
Love is Death is a fun one because it's kind of a... I think this is where the dark comedy is the best, the strongest.
Yes.
It's kind of juxtaposed because the song itself is not really that, like, heavy or intense or anything like that, but what she's singing about is.
And her performance is.
Absolutely, her performance, especially since it's directed at me and not at the character.
Like, you feel the crazy eyes. Like, it's intense, and, like, the way that she physically moves her body around, like, it is terrifying in the best funny way.
Yes. What do you like about this song? What's your...
I love the beat. I love the payoff, like, because we're building up to this Ruth character, and you kind of want to bang when you see her. And she... I was afraid she'd come in and be like, oh, no, I'm so sympathetic. I'm like, no. And she's like, love is death!
Yeah, I mean, she's just dancing around about, I'm murdering you and stealing all your shit.
Like, proud of it. And I thought, oh, that's so refreshing. I loved it.
I like the evil villains. Sometimes it's nice to not feel bad for the villain, to just be like, yeah, I hate this person.
But I wish that we had something a little bit on level with this early on so we knew what to expect. I think if we had started with the Angels getting ready in Ben's apartment before he comes in, we'd be able to understand, like, the tone ahead of us a little better.
Maybe they should have done it as a film, and then the opening scene with the overture is her putting poison into the drink.
Yeah, or something, like some kind of setup for her. But I love that song. I love that entire scene up until she leaves.
Oh, and one other thing. Angels can have boyfriends, they can all have boyfriends. Just because they're winged doesn't mean they can't get zinged. Angels can have boyfriends, lots of loser boyfriends. Just because they're divine doesn't mean the world's not in decline. There's no grand design.
What do you think of the music on a whole, like as a, like, orchestration, things like that?
I think the orchestrations are great, and I got to learn a little bit of how they did this, and I'm not sure if this is the best way to do it, but I think it was effective, so I guess it was. So what they did, on the set or on the stage, they would just have a piano track that they would sing to.
Okay.
And then they would mix the orchestrations over top the performance.
So it wasn't actually sung with the orchestration, it was sung with a piano.
And I think that the voices kind of reflect that. I think, and sometimes it works really well, like My Name is Jane. Like, but
it
sometimes
can work with the softer stuff, but I think what it can also do is songs where it gets more intense, the vocals may lack some of the intensity because they don't recognize how loud they need to be.
Yes. And I feel that specifically with songs like Talking to the Dead, where he's like, the orchestrations are asking more of the vocalist, and the vocalist is like, and I am talking to the dead, while the music is like, rah, 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 rah.
That's one way to describe it, I suppose.
We are official, very clear speaking individuals here.
We know what we're talking about. Give us money. Well, knowing that, it definitely is actually interesting, and it kind of makes you look at some of the songs a little bit differently as far as like how the vocals are sung, and maybe thinking about like it may have limited the vocal range a little bit in some of the songs, just not knowing how intense they needed to be. And now that I'm thinking back on it,
yeah, I mean, it's not bad. Like, I think the Les Mis movie has it much worse. Like, the Les Mis movie did something similar, and it's much worse about that. Like, this, it feels effective.
I think that's also just another quirk of this new style of releasing musicals.
Yeah, and we are going to have those, like, growing pains, like, as this develops. Like, I'm so happy it exists, but finding what the growing pains and what works and what doesn't is how we make this perfect. Because I'm excited. I love this. I love this a lot, dude.
Yeah, and so I'll say, you know, we had quite a few complaints, although I think we also had quite a few things we did like about this as well. So, like, what would be your overall thought on, like, would you recommend this? Would you?
I want people to go and download this, buy it, rent it, only because I want them to do more. I love Paul Gordon's music. I have loved almost everything he's done. I really like this. I think this probably is a better cast album to listen to than, say, a film to watch. Like, I would rather he had done his Jane Eyre, because I think that is a very much a perfect thing in and of itself. Whereas this, I feel like the fact that he developed something new, he had less time to figure it out before the filming and all that began. And so this kind of feels a little bit like, ooh, you're almost there. It's almost there, but not quite. And that is frustrating. It's actually much more frustrating than something like Dear Evan Hansen, where it's just not good and not doing it for me, where a lot of this is doing it for me. I love the ideas. A lot of the ideas are good, but it's just short of the finish line. I'm like, no.
It just feels like some aspects of it are definitely, especially story-wise, and there is some aspects of the music that probably could be improved as well, but mostly story-wise, it's underdeveloped. But I still, I would recommend seeking it out because I like this way of releasing. And I think it helps a lot with smaller musicals that want to get made and really don't have an avenue to do that at the moment. This would be something that they can do. And honestly, the music is actually pretty decent for it, too. So it's not like it's just a bad musical, because it's not. It's just a little bit underdeveloped.
Mm-hmm. How would you rank this among like other very similarly styled musicals like Next to Normal or Be More Chill, Dear Evan Hansen?
I'd probably put it a little bit below Be More Chill.
Mm-hmm. But above Dear Evan Hansen and Next to
Definitely
Normal.
Definitely above Dear Evan Hansen, just because Dear Evan Hansen basically has a lot of the same problems this has, but it's like fully complete and has won awards and shit, so it's like, you know, this is something that they've absolutely workshopped and completed, and it's still like, why is this so bad? Whereas I don't think
anything in this show is bad, though. Like, the thing is, nothing here is bad, and that's kind of another thing that bothers me. There's not a single bad thing about this. There's just things I like that I want expanded more.
I would rank it probably around Be More Chill. And I think Be More Chill has a similar feel as far as, like, they kind of have fantasy-type elements to it, similar styling of music in a lot of places, and references, modern references, yeah. Having complicated ideas that aren't fully developed enough, both of them have that going on as well.
And done by people I think are extremely talented, and I'm just excited to see what they do next, because Paul Gordon, who wrote this, is involved with the musicals, filming musicals, as well as Apple and Oranges, so he's going to be directly responsible for a lot of new musical content that we're going to have, and that's fantastic, dude. Like, we're getting more easier to access musicals from Broadway talent. It's I'm just so excited that I'm about to burst out the seams.
Jess is really excited. He took his Hawaiian shirt off. He's so excited.
Don't lie. It's still on. But you know what else gets me excited, Andrew? Hearing your cheese rating. What is your cheese rating for No One Called Ahead?
My cheese rating for No One Called Ahead. Why don't you do your cheese rating and I'll figure out what my cheese rating will be.
So my cheese rating for No One Called Ahead is St. Angel Triple Cream, because angels can have boyfriends. It's a velvet rope for your taste buds. Happy-go-lucky meets refined and traditional. And that's kind of how I describe this. It is both very bright, bubbly, and still very traditional in its musical theater style. I very highly recommend you go and download this right away. It will be in our description. All right, Andrew, what is your cheese rating and thoughts?
You know, I got very little for this one. I'm gonna give this a Swiss cheese, because it's a good cheese that Swiss is actually one of my favorite cheeses in real life. Just as a throwing that out there, but it is full of holes because it is an incomplete cheese. But it's still very good. The cheese you have there is very tasty.
You know what else is pretty tasty? Audible. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. Tis that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Wow, that was a lot of fun. That was a great podcast. Please download us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher at Musicals with Cheese. Please leave us some reviews on iTunes. We really want more reviews. Our goal is to get to 100 views by the end of this year. So if you guys could help us out with that, we'd really appreciate that.
How many are we at right now?
43.
Ooh, we're almost there. Almost halfway there.
Almost halfway there, so you can get us fully halfway there.
Check us out on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals.
Our Patreon is at Musicals with Cheese. We got a lot of wonderful things coming up. We're recording a Jason and the Technicolor Dreamcoat commentary that'll be up there soon.
I'm actually super excited for that. And I also really, really enjoy our Music Man and Cats ones that we've done. And there's also, you can watch like 3 hours of Jess get wasted out of his mind for the Tonys.
Our Instagram is Musicals with Cheese.
Our YouTube page is Musicals with Cheese, which I believe we are posting something today as well, possibly.
If I was able to get off my ass this week, there's a video of up there right now.
Yeah, excellent.
And our email is musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Also, do we want to promote our website?
I mean, you did just create it. I don't see a reason why we wouldn't promote it.
So we officially have an official website, www.musicalswithcheese.com. It is a one-stop shop for everything that we do. I am really proud of it, and I think you guys should start sharing it around, showing other people.
I think it looks actually really good. I think Jess did a great job with his web development skills.
Mm-hmm. And there you will find merch coming up. We're about to be selling some merch pretty soon. I'm really excited about that. Andrew's less excited about that.
I'm excited about merch. What do we have?
You don't know yet. It's a secret. Tell us what you guys would like as merch. Our title card was created by Jolene Casco. Follow her on Instagram at Jolene Casco. All right, you guys. Also, you might notice that we have a new intro composed by our amazing co-host, Andrew DeWolf. How do you like the sound of that?
I think I brought the tempo down like 30 beats per minute, but
yeah, and you also didn't hold it out as long, which I'm a little pissed about, but that's fine.
That's no problem.
Well, let's hear that intro. We'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No,
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.